Noise is a comedy show here on 2SER 107.3. And it's about to start. But before we begin, we have been told by basically everybody that we have to warn you about our language themes, because it might be offensive to some listeners. So, if that's you, well, sorry.
What's up, fam? This is Loud Noise coming at you live this sexy Sunday evening right here on 2SER 107.3. I'm Will, and in case you haven't heard, Loud Noise is the only show in Sydney calling it straight down the middle. So there's no bleeding heart for left-wing liberals or no pandering to the alt-right bullshit brigade. So get checking your virtue signalling at the door. Sparing yourself from any agenda-driven nonsense, it's time to fix that part of your brain.
Hello, fancy people. It's Hannah here. I'm literally calling this one in because, unlike Will, I actually go on holidays every now and again. And seeing as I haven't been there, Will, what's on the agenda for the show tonight?
Well, today we're going to visit some of the world's shitholes. We're going to take a look at what's been shaking a bit closer to home, and plus anything else that comes up over the next half hour. But before we get right into it with you, just in case you're feeling like our fingers on your trigger, you can soothe your sensitive soul at 2SER.com/loud-noise. And if that doesn't work, you can whine and moan and gripe and groan at Loud Noise Show on Twitter. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
Spirits Rejoice, a special summer series of spiritual jazz on 2SER every Saturday at 5 p.m. Take a journey each week with a soundtrack to a radical age of black power and cosmic communion. Spirits Rejoice, celebrating an explosive, exciting time when jazz got spiritual. 5 p.m. Saturdays on 2SER 107.3.
Hi there, I'm Nick Healy from Breakfast on 2SER. Catch me every weekday morning from 6 till 9 a.m, Monday to Friday. On Breakfast, we've got all the stories, ideas and music to get your day off to the best possible start. That's Breakfast with me, Nick Healy.
Stories, ideas, music, 2SER 107.3.
You're listening to Loud Noise, the show that's made from blood, sweat and tears. And vomit. And semen. Don't ask.
Let's not kid ourselves. Let's not pretend or dance around it. The sentiment the president expressed today is a racist sentiment.
Personally, as someone from South Shithole, I'm offended, Mr. President. Okay, I'm offended.
I think the president's comments were ugly. I think they were disgusting. I think they were repulsive. I think they degraded the office of the president.
The president of the United States of America, we expect more of him. We expect him to be an example. We are growing democracies, and we don't expect such remarks.
I'm sorry, but there's no other word one can use but racist. You cannot dismiss entire countries and continents as shitholes, whose entire populations, who are not white, are therefore not welcome.
I read those comments later last night. So first thing that came to my mind was very unfortunate, unhelpful.
I'm not surprised.
Sup, fam, we are back. Now, that was a lot of different people having an opinion on the supposed or alleged or even verified, if you want to call it that way, shithole comments about certain countries that Donald Trump made during the week. Now, Hannah, let's bring you into this. What do you think is the most important part to come out of this?
Well, look, there's no doubt that it's a very unfortunate thing, an offensive thing to say, but is it the worst thing he's done? No. And what I find interesting is the people that are, crowing the loudest are the people that casually ignore, that Europe is clearing great swathes of land and planting their ethanol crops there, and destroying all of this prime agricultural land for generations and generations of Africans in the future. And, they're dealing with corrupt governments and things and literally leaving these African nations with nothing. And they're the same people that are in an uproar right now about this shithole comment, whereas Trump just said it. They're actually doing it. They're treating it like some thing that they can just exploit.
So
their own monetary gain.
Hillary Clinton has gone on the attack about Donald Trump's tweeting, not tweeting, Donald Trump's comments about Haiti and African countries. And this is what she said. The anniversary of the devastating earthquake 8 years ago today is a day to remember the tragedy, honour the resilient people of Haiti, and affirm America's commitment to helping our neighbours. Instead, we're subjected to Trump's ignorant, racist views of anyone who doesn't look like him. Now, I don't know about you, Hannah, but for me, Hillary Clinton saying anything at all about Haiti is one of the most egregious and shocking. Like, if anyone shouldn't comment about anything Trump says about Haiti, like, comment about whatever you want, honestly. But if anyone really should keep their mouth shut when it comes to Haiti, it's Hillary Clinton. This is someone who, when she was in charge of the State Department, campaigned to lower the minimum wage in Haiti once they had legislated an increase for themselves from, like, 30 cents, I believe it was, to 60 cents an hour, which works out to about $5 a day. Campaigned so that factory workers in garment factories made it so the government didn't institute any kind of wage rise there. And this is after the earthquake.
And then, you know, there's the stealing of charity funds in the aftermath of that earthquake, you know, the redistribution that never ended up going to those people. So you know what? For me, Trump's words are odious. There's no doubt about it, and it's below the dignity of his office, but he's not literally stealing the food and the future and the infrastructure of a country or even a continent. It's just words. And there's lots of people that are doing way worse things, and yeah, maybe they're not shouting it out on Twitter or anything, but the things they're doing are far worse. Far worse.
Would you agree with the sentiment of the comments that these are countries that are, you know, if you're going to try and explain away what he meant, that these are countries where, you know, there's a lot of problems that are going on. A lot of them are caused by the same people, like you said, that are, you know, the loudest to call Trump a racist. But would you suggest that they do take more people from these countries?
Well, I mean, that's a tricky one because there's been a lot of studies and data that shows that the people that end up getting out of a country and moving to a more affluent one are usually the ones that are the most educated, the ones that are most equipped to be the leaders and the ones that are most equipped to actually make a change in that country. So if you take away all of the smartest and the most driven people from a country, how is it ever going to lift it out of poverty? How is it ever going to fix all of those fundamental problems within the government and within the society? So I'm not 100% on mass immigration from countries with a lot of problems. I think a lot more support needs to be done to give them a long-term solution to these problems. It's not really a long-term solution to take away all of their most intelligent and driven people.
And that's the thing, because the actual comments that came up, they were actually due to something very similar to this that they were actually discussing. So basically, it was all talking about the TPS, which is temporary protected status, for people who've been living in the United States for a very, very long time because of these, like, events that have occurred. So you've got basically the 58,000 people who actually came from Haiti after the 2010 earthquake there. You've got another 200,000 people, roughly, who fled the civil war in El Salvador in 1990 and the earthquake in 2001. You've got 57,000 people who fled Honduras after a 1999 hurricane. You've got 2,500 people who also fled Nicaragua from the same hurricane. And there's a lot of other countries where a lot of other things have happened, and then people have come to America. And that's actually what they were discussing, because these visas that they've gone to America on are set to be renewed every 18 months. But these people have stayed in America since these events have occurred. And if you look at El Salvador, for example, 1990, they've just kept getting further and further bridging visas for this whole period. And that's when that's what the broader context of what this discussion was about, and whether or not that should be continued or carried on. And that's what a lot of the people are concerned, that Trump's just going to pull his support for these kinds of visas continuing on and they're just going to get deported. So what would you think?
Oh, well, he probably will with his track record. I mean, he's very tough on immigration. He doesn't like anyone getting a sort of a free handout at all. Not that they are necessarily free handouts when they're coming from these countries where literally everything has been destroyed. But, you know, he's tough on immigration. That's what he was elected on. And you'd have to expect that he is going to do things like that because it appeals to his base. He promised that he'd build a wall and he'd deal with all these, I mean, people stealing other people's jobs or whatever it is that he campaigned on. And so, you know, he'd be alienating his base if he wasn't tough on immigration.
But do you think that these people should be allowed to stay? Because some of these people in that are actually here on these visas, you know, they've had kids here, they've lived here for decades, some of them have married people that are US citizens, their children obviously are US citizens now. Like, do you think that it's the right thing to do to let them stay? Because again, this is what the argument was about. Do you think that they should be allowed to stay, or do you think that, you know, you have to follow the letter of the law here, and because even if there is no clear pathway now for them to become citizens, if, you know, DACA doesn't go through or whatever, like, do you think that they should be made to go home?
Well, honestly, I think it should be a case-by-case basis. Are they contributing to society? Have they actually built something in this country? And if that's the case, then 100%, they're contributing to society and they're paying their taxes and they're a valuable addition to the American population. But, you know, maybe the ones that haven't built anything, like, they've got nothing to leave behind if they get sent back. I know that sounds kind of harsh, but, I mean, it's fair enough them not wanting to have to support people that don't contribute to the country.
Stepping just a little bit aside from that, just finally, now, there's a lot of, you know, hoo-ha, and you've got a lot of commentators. We heard some of them before. You might have heard Anderson Cooper and Trevor Noah and even Governor Cuomo of New York, everyone talking about just that one specific word within the whole broader context that must have been the conversation.
You know, that's just typical media for you. Trump tweets one thing and the whole media discusses it until he tweets the next one. Like, the amount of hours that humanity has spent discussing the ridiculous things Trump has said, it's egregious. I mean, they should be discussing things that actually matter.
So how do you fix this, though? Can you fix this?
Or until media agencies stop going for, like, the money-grabbing headlines, then no.
Which
you
is...
can't fix. Some media organisation has to step above it and go, you know what, we're actually going to report the news. Not some tweet, we're going to report the news, and not... I mean, if they're going to focus on this one comment, then they should unpack the whole situation in Africa and the way that other countries approach Africa and the way that other countries exploit Africa. They should cover everything. Instead, they're zeroing in on this one little comment that, in the grand scheme of things, doesn't make any difference.
So, in a sense, they're behaving in such a manner that's seeking not to educate the populace, but in a sense just to keep them living within this emotive bubble and not being able to rationalize things, because if you keep people in this, you know, highly emotion-driven, impulsive, it's a means of societal control in a sense.
Well, I don't know if I'd go that far. I just think a lot of media organisations are struggling in this modern era of information, you know, where anyone can post anything online.
Wait a minute. You think, though, because if you're going to take a look at how people think, you can either have someone, you know, engaged and highly paying attention and operating within their kind of rational mind, as opposed to if you're just feeding people this... without context, highly emotive, trying to tap into their feelings as opposed to their, you know, logical processing of events as they occur. If you can keep people in that state of mind, then they'll always listen and just not actually be able to rise up, for the lack of a better way of describing it, to rise up against you.
Look, I think that the people that really want to educate themselves are equipped to do that. Look at the internet. You can look up anything these days, but for the vast majority of people, they're going to work, they're paying their bills, you know, they're feeding their kids. They don't have a huge amount of time to go and research all this stuff. I mean, the information
so
is out there.
Signal.
People are really keen to do it. But, you know, they're just going to watch the news because they think it's relatively reliable on the most part. But, I mean, I think that news organisations should sort of take it on themselves to be a little bit more critical and not just go for the cheap money-grabbing headline that's going to cause the most furor on the internet or in people's homes.
Yeah, but even with a furor, the way in which everything's geared towards now, it's you have to be able to virtue signal because you need your social media, you know, to be on point. You need to be able to, like, get your likes. You need to be able to say that you're for something without actually ever doing something, and all of this plays into that. Because it's very easy for someone who's, you know, a host on CNN earning $20 million a year to go on the television and say, Trump's a racist. But you're a $20 million a year earning person who lives in a gated community who probably has never seen the mean streets of any city just in America, like Detroit or whatever, without having your fixes and without having your personal security.
And so, they've probably got a Hispanic maid working in their house, you know, an African-American nanny and, you know, a couple of gardeners that, you know, are from somewhere else, and they've immigrated to America. So it's not like they're going to give up their plush job for them. So, you know, that's what I'm saying. It's all hypocrisy.
And with that, we're going to go to something else that's a little bit of hypocrisy. Stay with us.
Well, sometimes I campaign by myself and I look across the crowd. And I think of all the money I've been taking, and in my head I laugh out loud. White House was my home, candidate Obama's nest, and I've missed the rose gardens and the way those interns dress. Won't you come on and vote? Stop making a fool out of me. Why don't you come and vote for Hillary? Hillary. 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 Might have to go to jail, but Congress is for sale. Gotta get a good lawyer. I hope Trump doesn't catch my plan. America don't need a man who fix it for ya. Are you indicting me this time? I'll change the cut of my hair, keep you busy. I get slapped with just a fine. I flip-flopping all the time. Are you dizzy? White House was my home, candidate Obama's mess, and I've missed the rose gardens and the way Bill's interns dress. Won't you come on and vote? Stop making a fool out of me. Why don't you come and vote for Hillary? Hillary. Well, sometimes I campaign by myself and I look across the crowd. And I think of all the money I've been taking. In my head I laugh out loud. White House was my home, candidate Obama's nest, and I've missed the rose gardens and the way Bill's interns dress. Won't you come on and vote? Stop making a fool out of me. Why don't you come and vote for Hillary? Hillary. 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 Hillary.
Greetings, people from the future. You are listening to Loud Noise on 2SER 107.3.
Welcome back. This essential Sunday evening. You're here with Will and Hannah listening to Loud Noise. Now, Will, one of the big things that's going to happen this year and that everyone's sort of quaking in fear about is the Royal Commission into Banking. Why do you think so many people are so worried about it?
Because so many people have so much money tied up within these banks, and so many things are dependent on the bank's success in Australia, when considering that about easily over 40%, it's probably a lot closer to 50% of the market is indeed made up of the banks. So they're the four biggest companies in the country, the four major banks, and then plus Macquarie Bank. It's any kind of confidence that you lose with these banks is incredibly dangerous, not just for the markets, but for financing, for all the small businesses that, you know, are heavily dependent on getting loans from these banks. Like, it's all interconnected, and the banks form like a very important part of our economy right now.
Now, there's a lot of chatter that interest rates are going to go up this year.
That's and a big that's jump.
Pardon me?
I said that's a big jump from interest rates to...
No, I'm weaving it in. Yeah. Give me a moment. So interest rates are meant to jump up this year, and that's a big problem because a lot of Australians have a lot of debt, especially in the housing market and those kind of areas. So if the interest rates do go up mm-hmm. and the confidence in banks does fall, mm-hmm. what's going to be the fallout here?
It depends on how the confidence in banks falls, and it depends on whether or not the Royal Commission actually has like a catastrophic impact on the share market. But look, in all honesty, you can't really place too much blame on the banks. Like, you can to an extent, but a lot of the debt that's being held, like the bad debt that you can, like the ones that, you know, could potentially be liar loans, something that could very well be explored within the Royal Commission, that the bank's practices in lending is poor. APRA's trying to crack down on that, but at the same time, once the money is loaned, it's very hard to like reverse that. And you've got a lot of people that have, you know, taken advantage of the rising house prices and then using that to borrow against the equity in this house to then buy another house to then buy another house, that could very well, at any point that interest rates get increased, find themselves in like a very, very, very dangerous predicament with not being able to pay back some of that money.
Pulling dominoes almost.
Yeah, in a sense. So it's highly dependent. Like, you, a lot of, like, some people say, like, depending on what analysts you talk to, depending on what, like, you know, economics firm or bank, like, some predict the rates are going to stay the same. Some say they're going to, you know, go up. But you kind of need to, in Australia, like, we kind of need to have a rate increase this year, especially considering the US is doing the same thing and other countries, Canada, England are all doing the same thing. You need to slow down the economy in a sense and not have easy access to debt, like cheap debt. Like, it does boost the economy, but there are other ways to do it. But at the same time, that's going to put a lot of strain on Australian households that aren't experiencing a lot of wage growth at the moment. So their wages aren't going up, but their debt is also going to be vastly more significant, or the repayments on that debt.
Oh, and also all their bills are going up. I mean, the electricity is going to go up, gas is going to go up.
But I thought renewables was always going to fix that. I thought renewables was going to fix the electricity prices. I thought it was going to make everything
cheaper.
Maybe
we just got to get Elon Musk here on a permanent basis and get him to sort out our renewable problem.
But is he really sorting out the problem with the amount of subsidies that he receives from the American government and other governments? Is he really fixing the problem?
There's another hypocrisy that, you know, we could go into in great
we
detail.
Should.
But
it's a false economy. Unless it stands alone. Like, I don't mind pumping money into research and development. You know, building better batteries, doing this, doing that. But you can't subsidise the cost of power for an industry just to make it cheaper. and you can't subsidize billionaires. That's not how it should work, because then you're making more expensive the electricity that businesses need now to thrive. And then we're falling behind countries like China and America that have like cheap energy. Their businesses have the ability to succeed and thrive. And now Australia just has to become a services economy and we lose our whole manufacturing industry.
I mean, it's a little bit more complex than just electricity prices, but yes.
No, but if you're looking at a profit and loss sheet, right, of like a business and your income, your expenses, when electricity is taking up such a large proportion of your expenses, and especially if you're in manufacturing, which means you are generally going to be a high power use industry, whether you're, you know, building boilers or you're, you know, I don't know, making steel or whatever else it is you're doing, it's a very electricity intensive. These are very electricity-intensive things. And if energy costs are exorbitant, then you can't hire new people, you can't spend money on capital expenditure because all your money's going to AGL.
Yeah, I mean, you're just stagnant. There's no growth there.
Yeah. And you can't, you know, give your money back to shareholders. You can't hire new people. But the thing that's been going on in Australia is you're having all these people take on all this debt. You're having wages not going up. You're having companies hold on to their money and you're having other companies gouging those companies to pay for the electricity. So it's kind of this bubble, and it's not a bubble in the sense of, you know, like a dot-com bubble, but everyone's stuck in place in lockstep. And the concern is if interest rates go up and then go up a little bit more, it's going to put everything out of off-kilter because it's so protected right now. Which is why any kind of big event like a royal commission into banking that like eviscerates the confidence in the banks or anything like that, it could cause a lot of drama. You're not concerned?
I'm a little bit concerned, but I mean, there's also going to be opportunity for people that don't have their money tied up in the housing market. And, you know, it's just going to be a shift in who owns the houses. You know, people are always going to buy and want to live in houses, so I'll be interested to see how this year unfolds.
But it could be devastating for the share market as well, for the equity market, for options markets. If you have half of the index, the ASX 200 index, collapse, the knock-on effects will be huge.
Anyway, speaking of what else is huge, we've got to dine and dash on you, dear listeners. We've got a million things to do this Sunday evening that don't involve you guys. But we'll be back next week at 9 p.m. same time. Don't know if I'll be here. I'll see what I'm doing with my holiday, but we will definitely be back to regale you with more tales of the world's stupidity.
Jailbreak is coming up next, guys, so don't forget to drop the soap and lather up. That's all the things that we have time for. If you want to get more of that good, head on over to www.2scr.com/loud-noise, or you can beg and gag for it at Loud Noise Show on Twitter. For the Loud Noise team, I'm William. She's Hannah. Have a great rest of night. And remember, the left is never right, and the right is batshit crazy.
There's a smuggler, says he'll send me far, reaching western lands, this war is very dark. Finally I'm on the boat, water crystal clear, going ahead, I sold my stuff just to make it there. See how I leave, no home to go back to, but you underestimate the things that I went through. That there smuggler said he'd send me far, left us for dead on a boat, and now it falls apart. The scars of our war remind me of all the pain I'm feeling, the death that haunts us all. The scars of chemicals, they leave me breathless. Pain I'm feeling, we've lost it all. Floating refugee, you have my life inside your head, but you blame me, refugee. Keep me detained on Manus till I'm old, or get sent back to Dinesh, where I'm raped or join the fold. Now I'll fight, 'cause you laugh